beginners, introduction to diversity. Also, we could say a diversity introduction for people who are playing life on easy. So, what do I mean by playing life and playing life on easy? So, one of the things that comes up when you start talking about diversity is you can often get pushback from people who say, you know, oh, diversity, it's just helping other people at the expense of people like me, that sort of thing. So, what I want to say is that everyone has hard bits in life. Everyone can find things difficult. Everyone comes across new experiences. If you happen to look and sound and act like me, so white, English as a first language, male, middle class, those kind of things, then life tends to be a bit easier. It can still be hard. Like a video game, you can put it on easy and still lose. But there are also people who find other things harder. What I want to do is go through a little bit about experiences that I've had in my personal life, at work, in Apache projects, which have shown me a little bit about how it can be harder for other people, shown me a bit about why some of this stuff matters, and some of the tips and tricks I've picked up along the way, to hopefully help all of you understand a little bit about why diversity matters, some of the things that you can do to help people out, and then hopefully at the end, some of the other resources that you can use to go and learn more about this topic. And ideally also, later on, learn a bit more about diversity from people who are actually diverse, and not just diversity is different styles of beard, which can be an issue at tech conferences. So, first one, time zones. Okay, so, things around time zones. You've got people who are going to be working different weeks. If you're on the US West Coast and you're trying to work with someone in Australia, you've basically only got a four-day overlap week. If you're working with people in the Middle East who take Thursdays and Fridays off, then you might only have a three-day week overlap. If you've got people who are working part-time, then they might only be working some of the same days as you. Which means that if you're trying to build your project, or trying to build your team at work, and you're trying to get people involved, and you're saying, okay, well, every Monday morning, Australia time, we're going to do a kickoff for the week. Right. So, Australia's fine, India's probably okay, US, Sunday evening, never going to join. Equally, if you're in the US, you're like, hey, we're going to do a retrospective, see what's gone on, we're going to do it on a Friday afternoon over beers. Yeah, the Australians are already at the beach on Saturday, not going to join. The people who always take Friday off to help out with childcare or to do their favourite hobby, not going to be able to join. So just be aware of how different people in your organisation or different people in your project are going to have different working times, different time zones, different days that they're working, and factor that in. So at the ASF, we tend to recommend a minimum of 72 hours for decisions, which is to give people in different time zones, different weekends, always a chance to get involved. If you're doing this for your personal life, or for your personal projects, or for work stuff, again, think about where people are, think about when they can join in, and make sure that, especially if you're on the US West Coast and you're dealing with folks in India, pretty much any time is going to be crap for them. Just bear that in mind. Another thing, is this your day job or are you a volunteer? So if you've got your new Apache project, it's all going really well, and you're tending to make decisions relatively quickly, and you're tending to make your decisions like Tuesday, Wednesday, and there's someone on the project that is only volunteering and only working weekends because they've got a different day job, if all your decisions tend to happen in the middle of the week, they're not going to get a chance to have a say, which means that they're not really going to feel engaged in the project, which means that they won't dedicate as much of their volunteer time, which means that you're going to struggle to grow your community. So just try and bear in mind who the other people are in your project, what sort of time they've got available. If they're all like you and you're all giving it your full time, then that might be great. But then you're only going to have a community made up of people who have a full-time job where their company lets them work on it, not necessarily going to be the full possible community that you could have. If you try and make sure you always put things on the mailing list, wait for feedback, give people a chance to get involved, then people who are volunteering, or people who have it as part of their day job but only a small part of it can get involved. And if you can bring those additional people in, you can grow your community a lot better. Because then when users come along, if a user comes along with a problem and you try and encourage them to get a patch in, and it seems like everyone else is giving a little bit of time, they'll feel welcome, they'll feel part of it. If they feel that everyone else is going 100 miles an hour, 7 hours a day, then they'll be like, oh, what's the point? I'm never going to be able to catch up with them. They won't get join in. Your community won't grow. Okay, another one, languages. Different people speaking different languages, different ways of getting involved. So I'll come back to this a bit later on with some more examples on that. But just be aware that, I mean, I speak English. I'm from England. Robert also speaks English from England, but doesn't sound the same. Many of you in this room would say that your first language is English from America. There can be misunderstandings even between myself and Robert, let alone between Robert and some of you that maybe aren't so used to the English regional accents. And they're all people with English as a first language. If you then move to people who are coming from different backgrounds who are speaking English as a second, third, fourth, fifth language, it's going to be harder for them. So make sure that when you're writing your emails to the list, when you're speaking with your colleagues on the phone, be aware of that background and be aware of not using really, really fancy, complex, conjugated clauses or really weird idioms. That's not necessarily going to come across. It's going to become a bit diverse. It's going to sort of fragment your community into those that can follow along with the really flowery, prosy words that you're typing and those who are just like, I put it in Google. Google didn't know either. No one else in my office understands what the hell he's going on about. No, just give up. But if you can try and think about making sure that your language is clear, not too many idioms, not too many negative things in a row. Some languages, if you add multiple negative words together, that emphasises the negativity. Some languages, you've got to count up, and is that an odd or even number of negative clauses, and does that mean positive or negative? So some of those things won't come across. Just kind of be aware of who that you're going to be writing for and speaking for to make sure that what you're doing, I mean, you're writing to convey a message, to convey your idea for the project. If you can do that in code, great, but if you're going to write prose, if you're going to write an email, make sure that you're aware of who you're writing it for and that they're actually going to understand you. They're much more likely to agree to your patch idea, to your new feature, if they understand what the hell you're going on about. Equally, your boss, your investors, more likely to give you the time, the money to make your project go further if they have a vague clue about what you're talking about, if they can actually understand you. Okay, next one. Being the odd one out can really have an effect on how you act. So if you feel like everyone is like you, everyone behaving like you, you're going to be quite confident, generally. You're going to be willing to put your ideas out there, to stand up for your ideas, to stand up for the new feature you think that you should add to the project. If you're feeling like everyone's looking at you, you'll just be a little bit timid and be like, oh, can we add the feature? Oh, no, don't worry about the feature. No, it's fine, we'll do with that. Mm. So just be aware that if people are feeling the odd one out, they might lack confidence, they might take setbacks stronger, and then you might have the thing where Lars had a great idea for a feature, but everyone was chatting away really, really loudly in Australian English, and he was like, well, I speak German and British English, but didn't understand that, or, well, you know, maybe it's just because I'm German. So, no, I won't stick my hand up and say, 2 years ago we tried that, it didn't work. I'll just keep quiet. And now you've just recreated the bug that Lars knew about, that because he was feeling the odd one out, he didn't feel confident raising, and you've just wasted all that time. So just be aware that if you're the odd one out, that you might not have the same confidence. So, example, charity IT. Everyone knows charities? Now, certainly in the UK, a lot of people working in charities tend to be female. I was working for a small tech firm in the UK. We had a contract to do some web application work for this charity. Most of the people that we were talking with at the charity about the project, sort of 50-50 male-female, it was all fine. Then we went down to the office for a meeting. And we got there and went in the door. And the receptionist's like, oh, you must be here to see Pierre from IT. We're like, haven't actually said anything yet? She's like, well, your guys, the only guys that come in are in suits to go and see the managing director, or they're not in suits to see Pierre from IT. So you must be here to see Pierre. And we're like, yeah, okay. And then we're like, oh, we're a few minutes early. Oh, can we use the loo? And she's like, I think there is one male toilet down the back. We're like, what? So, well, everyone here's a woman, so all the toilets are female only, except for that one disabled one down the back. And you're like, oh. And then you're walking around the office and you're like, yeah, I am the only guy. I am the odd one out. Well, and it's just that first time you're like, ooh, what's going on? And yeah, and then you don't necessarily have that same confidence that you would otherwise have because you are the odd one out. And everyone is not looking at you. Yeah, these women were just doing their jobs, and yeah, some more random IT guys had turned up, so what? But you just really felt the odd one out and out of place, and it knocks your confidence. So if you're that person on the project, or someone else is on your project, feeling like that, it's going to affect them, so you need to make them feel welcome to get the best out of them. Okay, if not everyone is in person, more issue on Apache projects and on your business projects where you've got some outsourced people or people in other offices or people working from home. If not everyone's in person, and a lot of you are, it's really hard to feel part of the group and also to join in the discussions. If you've got like 10 people sat in a room, maybe 10 people sat in the room in the Bay Area and two people at home and one guy in India, and everyone's looking at each other, chatting, nodding, waving, and you're on the phone, you've missed all that. And you just be there, I mean, who here has been on a conference call where you're on the phone and a lot of people aren't? After about an hour, do you still feel as engaged with the talk, with the conference as at the start? So if you're going to be doing things at Apache where some of you are in the same place and some of you aren't, we do ask that you bring things back to the main list. If you're going to be doing things on the phone for work, make sure you periodically say, folks on the phone, anything to add? Make sure you have those pauses. Give them a chance. Otherwise, they're going to switch off. They'll lose interest, they'll switch off, they won't take part in your project, they won't really buy into your project, and you're going to lose people. Okay. Another one, mistakes no one mentions. So, a few years ago, I spent 6 months living in France. And one of the things when I went to this co-working space was I'd said, je suis Nick. To introduce myself, I am Nick. Now, those of you that speak French, I think we might have one or two people would know it's je m'appelle Nick. I call myself Nick. But everyone thought it was really cute that I was using this weird English idiom to introduce myself. And it was like probably 2 months in that someone was like, you do know that's not actually how it is. And I was like, oh God, yeah, I was taught that. Like, at middle school, and I just completely forgot, and I've been making a fool of myself, introducing myself to everyone, who'd just been like, oh, it's cute, he's doing it differently, and it's like, no, I actually wanted to know I was making this mistake. And then, I felt really self-confident for like another 2 weeks saying anything, so it's like, well, what other mistakes am I making that everyone's like, oh. So, if you spot someone in your community making a mistake, and you can point it out to them in a friendly way, they will often appreciate it, but be aware of the effect it has going to have on their confidence. So if you can, try and point it out in a dispassionate way. So rather than saying, Emmett, that's not how we make tea. You might say, I saw this really interesting article that I thought everyone might be interested in about ways that different cultures make tea, and it turns out that my mum does it weirdly. You know, and like, you share that with your team, and you're not really saying, psst, Emmett, you're doing it wrong. But you're giving a way for someone to realise that maybe what they've done is not the typical way, but without it being about them and without them knocking their confidence. So just, If you have got people who are trying to learn your language or trying to learn your project's way of doing things, do help them. Don't let them make mistakes. But also, if you're going to point this out, try and point it out in a way that it's not going to knock their confidence, where they're not going to feel it's about them. try and do it in a general way. So, another one, when I was in France, people would be like, Nick, so all English people drink tea, not coffee. And I'm like, I don't feel I can answer authoritatively on behalf of 50 million people. And they're like, oh, okay. So, what about charcuterie? Do the English like that? And I'm like, no, still I can't. But everyone was like, well, we've got this question. We're wondering what the English like. And hey, look, there's an English guy there. Let's ask him. And it was just like, what's going on here? So if you've got people in your community that are different, be careful about saying, so Lars, what's the German way of doing this? Lars, what's the German way? What's the German way? Because then he's just like, I'm a coder. I'm a coder first, German second. But if you just keep focusing on him being different as being German, he's going to feel a little bit more self-conscious. So if you've got different people in your team, it's wonderful if you can include them and say, right, well, we've got an English public holiday coming up, so most of us are going to be off on Monday. What about other people? When's your national holidays? You can make it an inclusive thing. Bring people in, get them discussing about public holidays in their country or something like that, rather than really focusing on how, well, we're all off on Monday, but Emmett's in the States, so Emmett's going to have to do all the work. Emmett's going to feel a bit less happy about not being in the UK that day, and it's going to make him feel really different. So just, you know, try not to, if someone is different, different country, different gender, something like that, if you want to know about what's different, you can ask them in general, but don't be like, we're making you the representative of that one quality and now going to quiz you on it. So again, what's the position on that? Okay, another one, people can behave differently in different contexts. So at the co-working space, every so often we'd switch into English. And people are like, oh my God, Nick, you're a lot louder and more confident in English. What's happened? I'm like, no, it's like, it's 4 p.m. I've been talking in French for a bunch of hours and you're all speaking French much better than me because, you know, that's your first language. So obviously I'm going to speak a bit differently in my first language than my second language. When I'm traveling, like I go to India a lot for work, and then when I'm there, I'm often jet lagged the first couple of days, you know, all the different things going on, and meet my colleagues there, and then sometimes they'll come to the UK and they'll be like, oh my God, you're really different when you're at home and awake and in your office to when you're jet lagged and sleep deprived and in our office. So just be aware that people are going to behave differently in different circumstances, different places. If you're normally used to working with them on a mailing list, you meet them in person, they could be different. Just be aware that the mental model that you can build up of someone might not be the whole person. They could be different. They could have, if you discover that someone works much better on email than on the phone, don't keep asking them to join the conference call. Equally, if they're not able to type well at the moment, and there's a way where you can say, well, you can read the emails, and then if you're having trouble, just give me a phone call and I'll type up the notes for you and send it onto the list. So if you've got someone that speaks English really well but has issues with writing English but they can read, you can be like, okay, so what we're going to do, you can read the main list. If you want to post something, just bounce the email to me and I'll check it for you. Or ring me up and leave me a message and I'll type it up for you. And that can help someone build the confidence to join in the community, even when their language is maybe not perfect. One thing I found in France, in northern France, there were a lot of people that spoke pretty good English but thought they spoke terrible English, something about the schools. You go to Paris, a lot of people seem very confident speaking English. It's not always the case in all of France. And I'd be speaking to people and they'd be like, oh no, I couldn't possibly talk to you in English, Nick. My English is terrible. I'm like, well, you just said that to me in English and it sounded fine. So clearly it's not an issue. They're like, they had their confidence knocked by something at school and then they didn't want to speak in English, even though they were fine with it. So you can find people in your community. Things will cause them to doubt themselves. And if you can help them overcome that, you can get a lot more out of them in your community. Right, another one, challenge of being the first. If you are the first person of a given type in a community, you're going to feel you stand out more. You might stand out, or you might not. If you've got a name like Robert, most people are going to be aware that that's male. If you've got a name like Lars, the Germans are going to know that's male. A lot of other people might be like, don't know, is it a man? Is it a woman? Does it matter? So sometimes that you might, you know, Lars might think everyone here is going to know I'm male because everyone knows that Lars is a typical German male name, and then he joins the community and no one knows and no one cares. But he might feel if he's just joined like a women in tech project to help mentor them, that they're all going to be like, what's this guy doing coming here? But they might not even realise. But that might affect how he chooses to act, how he chooses to behave. And also, some people won't want to join a community where they'd be the only one. So, company I used to work for, called Torchbox, when I joined, it was 10% women. As in, there were 10 people and there was one woman, Helen. As the company grew, it stayed around 20-30% women. On the whole, you know, we added about one woman for every 3 men that we added. We weren't particularly aware of this being a problem. We weren't particularly trying that hard. And then at one point, we thought, you know, actually, especially when we're doing all the charity work for charities where most of the staff are women, and also in the tech industry, maybe we should try a bit harder to get that up. So we took a few simple steps to try and make it better. And we seemed to pass a certain tipping point. And we went from struggling a little bit to get women in to being 50% women in about 6 months, which was a bit of a sort of surprise to us. But it seemed that there were actually a lot of women in IT who would look at the company, they'd look at the website, they'd look at some of the people there and be like, so there's one woman called Helen and 20 guys, no way. Not even going to talk to them, not even going to apply. I do not want to be in that environment. And even though we were actually quite nice and there wasn't some big tech bro problem where we were all really shitty to women, there were just a lot of women who'd be like, oh, I don't want to be the first or the second. No, thank you. So it can be hard to get the first person in, and you're going to struggle sometimes to keep them and be nice to them. But if you can push through and get a significant number of people of a given minority, you can find that you can very quickly hit parity, actually get more people from that diverse community into your community than the underlying pool of people would suggest is available. Now, the tech industry, depending on who you ask, how you define, in the US, it's probably about 20-25% women. At Apache, we are about 8-9%, I think, the last survey. So Apache has fewer women than the industry that we're pulling from. But if you go to some companies, so the previous company I worked for was in the life sciences industry, and in our Indian office, we had 60% women. So there was just something about the kind of mission that the company was doing, the way that it was set up, female managers, a bunch of different things that meant that we had a huge number of women in IT, coders, developers, working for the firm. It is possible to get a lot of people from one diverse community, from one minority, to come into your community and even greatly exceed what is statistically likely to be available by being nice, by being welcoming. And then that can have a really big impact, make a big difference. So be aware of what it's going to be like for those first one or two people, welcome them in, be supportive of them, and if you're lucky, you can then get up to a much higher percentage than you might think is going to be available. Okay, a little bit more on language. Speaking a foreign language is tiring. Those of you who got some nods in the room from people who speak other languages, but if I'm in France, 9 a.m, had a coffee, I can speak pretty well in French. If I keep speaking in French, by about 5 p.m, I cannot speak any language. Not even English. Just the language bits of my brain have been drained, and I'm just a gibbering wreck going, you know, speaking in other languages can be tiring, can be hard. So be aware that if you're going to have other people joining a community from other language backgrounds, even if it seems like they can speak English perfectly, if that's the working language of your project, which it often is at Apache. Just be aware that they maybe can't maintain that level for a whole day like you can. Try and factor that in. If you've got your company and you've got people from other from bits of Europe or South America or Asia, and you're going to get them onto a conference call, be aware that a 30-minute conference call, they can probably join in fine, but if you get them on a whole day brainstorming workshop, by the end of the day, they're not going to be working and speaking as productively. And just factor in that tiredness of other languages. Getting a word in. Don't know, those of you who speak French, certainly La France de la Métropole, the way that they speak French and have discussions, people kind of talk over each other quite a lot. There's some cultures where you kind of wait for your turn and you kind of use some body language to indicate that you want to jump in, and then you wait until there's a gap. A lot of French culture, you just kind of launch in and everyone sort of gets about three words in, and then you kind of agree who's going to go and the rest of you stop. So you'd be like, oh no, we're going to let him go for a bit, and then, oh, there's a pause, okay, so three of us are going to, oh no, we're going with him. But if that's not your first language, and also that's not your culture, I'd say at the kind of group lunches at the co-working space, it was about month two before I actually managed to join a discussion. Before I was actually able to think of what I wanted to say fast enough to jump in and also have the confidence to be like, no, that's actually what everyone does, so I'm going to jump in too and say something. But for the first time, for a while, everyone thought I was just really quiet at lunch because I wasn't joining the conversation, because I just didn't know how to join in, how to jump in, get a word into the conversation. People from different cultures are all going to face similar things like that. So if you're on a mailing list, that's not really going to be so much of an issue. But if you're trying to do things in person or on the phone, just be aware of how different cultures indicate that they want to join in. People from certain backgrounds might feel that it's rude for them to jump in. Certainly that can be an issue for some women, that if they feel like if they are accused of being very bolshy or other things, if they try and force their way into conversations. So if they've had that kind of thing in the past where people have said bad things to them about them joining in, then especially if they're also tired or second language or that sort of thing, they're not going to join in the conversation. But if you can be aware of that and try and let people join in, then everyone can have a say. You don't necessarily need a conch that you pass around and only the person holding the conch can speak. But just be aware that, you know, saying, well, you know, I've been speaking solidly now for 25, 26 minutes. Maybe it's about time that we let someone else get a word in. Just be aware that if certain people are dominating and other people are in the room and you want to hear from them, that they might need an encouragement to join in, might need an explicit opening for them to actually say something. And otherwise, they're not going to feel great that they had something to say and they couldn't say it, and they're going to lose engagement. So you're going to lose those people from your project. Okay, another one. If you're not in your first language, it can be hard to make jokes. A few times, I'd make a joke in French, and people were like, no, you made a mistake. No, you got that word wrong. I was like, no, that's the joke. And they'd be like, oh, yeah. You know, actually, that was funny. And then I gave up trying to make jokes in French in that group, because it's just like every time I was having to explain that, no, that wasn't a mistake, that was the point of the joke. And yes, I know I swapped that word around, but that was to make it funny. And it's like, and then I'd be like, yeah, actually, no, that was a really good joke. But I just gave up because it just didn't work. So people from other backgrounds may not want to make jokes. And then you might be like, oh, Lars, I mean, he's just living up to the German stereotype. He's not funny. Actually, no, he is hilarious. But if you were to just be judging him on making some particular English language puns, you might think that he's not funny. But actually, he just that's just not the way of him expressing his humour. So if you're going to be judging people in certain ways or expect them to make jokes in certain ways, if they haven't got the cultural background or they haven't got that language background, or you keep trying to correct them when they're trying to make a joke, then they're going to give up and you might get a wrong impression of what someone's like and how fun they are. Another key one is around written and spoken. Some people will learn English in schools, with a lot of emphasis on speaking. What seems to be common in a lot of places is more emphasis on writing, because the teacher might not have the confidence in their own spoken English to focus on that, or they might be from a culture which discourages a lot of conversation in the classroom. So if people at school are hearing English spoken by a teacher who's not very confident, and they're not having a chance to practice discussing in English with the person sat next to them in school, they can end up with excellent written English, but lacking the confidence or the skills in the spoken English. So if you ask them to join in on a mailing list, they'll be fine. And then you say, oh, well, we want to do a conference call, or we want to give a talk, then they're not going to be willing to do that. Equally, if they picked up English by watching TV and chatting with people, then they might have excellent spoken English but very poor written English, because they don't necessarily know how to spell, and spelling in English is weird, because you basically say, is this a German word or a French word or a Danish word or a loan word? And depending on which one of those it is depends on which kind of spelling technique that we're going to have picked 300 years ago when we standardised our language. Try and explain that to someone who's picked up English from watching YouTube and chatting to their friends. Yeah. So if you've got someone who is going to be struggling with the written English but is strong on spoken English, then maybe try and find ways for them to get involved, have someone who can type things up for them. But just be aware that different people can have very different skill levels in spoken and written, in reading and in listening. And take that into account so that you can get the best out of your team, out of your community. Okay, it can be really daunting to get started on something. So if you've got someone that's just come out of university that wants to get involved in open source, that doesn't have any experience in it, doesn't have any good mentors, it can be pretty daunting for them to get involved. Now, it seems to happen that certain groups of people have a bit more confidence in this. If you're white and male and middle class, you'll seem to have a bit more confidence than average, and maybe you'll be willing to be like, well, I've not contributed to open source before, but I've read the manual, how hard can it be? Whereas other people who've had more setbacks in life, who are playing life on a harder difficulty setting, might come along and say, well, I want to get involved in this project, and the how to contribute guide is 3 lines and then to do, and then it says to check out the code, but the link that they've given to the code doesn't work anymore, and oh, fuck it, I'm just going to go and find another project. So just be aware that people getting involved with different confidence levels are going to have a different willingness to put up with the problems, and if you actually make it quite hard and you don't give them the support, you're only going to be left with the people with the confidence or the bloody-mindedness to push through. If you can try and make it welcoming, if you can try and make it supportive and easy, then you're going to get a wider group of people who lack the confidence or lack the willingness to put up with the problems otherwise. Okay, another one, but I'd be no good at X. So this comes up a lot when you're dealing with new people. Let's say you bump into someone at a user group or a conference, and you say, oh, have you come across this project? They're like, oh, yeah, I've used it before. And you say, oh, awesome, you know, have you thought about submitting a patch or some documentation? Oh, I'd be no good at that. Or there's someone in your community that has been doing some good work, and there's a user group in the local town, and you say, oh, well, you know, why don't you go along and talk about our projects there? And they're like, oh, I'll be no good at speaking. It is an issue for a lot of people, is having the confidence to try something new. And they'll often need encouragement and mentoring. So, conference speaking. I'm here, I'm speaking, I'm giving this talk, I'm frequently at conferences, frequently speaking. I didn't used to be like that. I had a manager that encouraged me to give a 3-minute talk. There was a conference happening that my company was putting on. I'd been doing some AV stuff, but I didn't really want to speak. I didn't feel I had the confidence for it, but my manager felt I did, because I'd given talks at work. That was fine, talking to my colleagues, but I couldn't go out on stage in front of 100 people and talk to them. And my boss persuaded me to go and give a little 3-minute lightning talk about the AV stuff that I'd been doing that night. There was a gap. So I was like, well, okay, yeah, I can talk about that. It's vaguely interesting. People keep asking me how we've got the Wi-Fi to work in the venue because it never normally works and stuff. And I went up and I gave him a little talk and it was fine. And then the next time he was like, oh, why don't you do a 10-minute slot about the project that you've just done, that you just presented at work? And I was like, oh, okay. And I got roped into it by someone giving me the confidence, by seeing that I had the potential and just giving me the little nudges and the ramp. I didn't go from not speaking to giving a keynote. I went from not speaking to giving a 3-minute talk, to giving a 10-minute talk, to giving a 20-minute talk, to giving an hour talk, to one conference a couple of years ago where I gave 6 talks in 4 days. That's probably a bit excessive. But people need help. They need encouragement. They need mentoring. And they need steps. It's very hard to just say to someone, okay, you've used the software before. Why don't you submit a patch to add a whole new feature? Go. But if you can give them a contributing guide where you say, okay, can you give us a documentation patch? Can you give us a little bug fix? And then can you describe a little bit to us about how you want this new feature to work? And then sketch out maybe a little bit of the API and then explain that on the list and then go and fill in some unit tests and then develop it. You can actually have them develop this whole new feature themselves. But just by giving them the mentorship and the advice and the steps, you can help them realize that they can do that. Right, another thing, hits a lot of beginners, but you were almost there. Okay, who remembers doing maths at school? Okay. You remember how sometimes you'd be doing the sort of medium difficulty maths problems and you just got stuck and your teacher would come along and be like, well, yeah, so you've got that, okay. And if we join that together, then, well, look, so you've got the answer. And you'd be like, oh, God. Hopefully some people had that, you know, where you were almost there, but you just couldn't see how to get that last bit and you got stuck. And in the maths problem at school, you just handed me your homework and said, oh, I couldn't do question 7, even though you almost could. But you looked at it, you looked at it, you looked at it, you gave up. That is a common problem for newer people, that they almost are able to do something, but then they're going to lack the confidence to actually ask for the help for that last bit. Playing a new computer game? Hopefully some of you have some time spare to play new computer games. Now, if you're lucky these days and you're playing the computer game and you get stuck, you can Google it and find out the answer. If you go back 20-odd years, then maybe you had to ask your friends or maybe go and buy the how-to guide or hope that your local library had the guide. I mean, there are probably a few people that played Myst and were able to do all of it without having to go and get that book or get their friend to show them, but that was, you know, quite a complex game. But that's a game. It doesn't matter if you can't finish the game if you get stuck. If you want your career to be an open source developer and you can't get your first patch in, that's a bit more serious. If you want to get these GSOC students that have just come along to your community to be new maintainers of your project and they can't get the help, that's going to be a major thing. So be aware of where are going to be the problem steps, the pain points, and try and help them through it. Now, one way to do this is positive first feedback. Okay, who here uses Instagram? Okay, right. So, the first time I went on Instagram, like, I posted a photo, and I put some hashtags on it, and people liked it. Like, almost immediately, I was on holiday, I posted a photo, got likes, and it's like, oh, wow, actually, this is quite good fun. It's like actually getting feedback that is positive and welcoming early. That makes a difference. Right, a lot of the Stack Exchange beta sites, some of the smaller sites, you go on there, you ask a question about being an expat or travel or French language or sports or skiing or something like that. And people are like, hey, welcome to the community. Okay, yeah, so this is your answer. You know, you're like, yeah, I want to get involved in this. There's a community called FlyerTalk, which is for frequent travellers. And there are some of the forums on there which are pretty high volume. One of the ones I'm on is the British Airways one. But if you post there for the first time, and it does show the post count, generally within an hour or two, one of the forum ambassadors will come along and be like, hey, welcome, please ignore the 3 posts that you've just got telling you you're a bit stupid. It's people not noticing that you're a newbie. Here's a link to the welcome page. Here's a link to the FAQ. Please do stick around. Please do join in. Don't pay any attention to him. He's always a bit of a dick. But, you know, you get this welcoming post, and they're doing it pretty much every Every time they see someone with post count 1 or post count 2, they're coming in and saying, yeah, it's a high volume community and there are some people who aren't amazing here, but we're going to tell you that that's okay. We're going to try and welcome you in. We're going to try and give you the resources to try and make them avoid making the mistakes again. And we're spotting that you're new. We're recognising that and we're trying to help you and trying to welcome you. And then a lot of people stick around. On the other hand, Stack Overflow. Most people new to coding, new to Stack Overflow, their experience of it is downvote, downvote, you're an idiot, close, 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 downvote, closed. It really, really isn't welcoming for new people. Now, the folks at Stack Overflow are trying quite hard at the moment to improve that. But for a lot of new developers, they don't come to our project list when they first have a problem with our software. They go to Stack Overflow. And if they're not great at asking questions because they're a new developer and no one's taught them how to write a minimum complete reproducible example, how to write the minimum good bug report, then they're going to get downvoted, they're going to get their question closed. And if you're not careful, they're going to think that that was your community that did that. They're not going to recognise that the question they posted on Stack Overflow with the Apache Poi tag that got downvoted was probably not Nick or Dave from the Apache Poi project downvoting it. It was other people in the Stack Overflow community who were saying that's a bad quality question. And even though those people are actually saying, here's a link to how to ask a good question, here's a link to the beginner's intro, a lot of people see that just really negative. And then they can come away thinking, oh, the Apache Poi community, terrible because I got downvoted on Stack Overflow by other people when I asked a question on Poi. And then they get that bad first impression. And you've got to be aware that a lot of your new users, a lot of your new potential contributors are finding questions, asking questions on Stack Overflow, and they're not getting a great experience often. And that has an impact on how you're going to get new people for your project. But the ones that do come to your user list, that do come to your Slack channel, try and make sure that even if they're asking a poorly thought through question or opening a not great bug report, that you're like, hey, welcome, thank you so much. It would be awesome if you could also attach the full stack trace and the file and maybe also something about how to reproduce the problem. But, you know, we're really glad that you've come here and that you're engaging with us, and try and be like the feedback sandwich. Positive, negative, positive. Rather than the Stack Overflow one, which is negative, negative, maybe slightly positive, negative, negative. Those people that do come to your community, who maybe have had a bad experience on communities like this, try and spot that they're new. Try and welcome them, try and help them stick around, because those people are going to be your future developers. Okay, got to remember, it was hard for most of us. Now, there's quite a lot of people in the room with grey hair, grey beards, no hair, who've been around a while.
20
years ago. Yeah. But it's hard for us to remember what it used to be like for us. And we're trying to bring new people into our communities. Just try and think back, try and be welcoming, try and be supportive of those new people. Because if you're not, you're only going to be left with some really bullshit people that are going to put up with the crap. And if you want to build a diverse, welcoming community, and you're only getting the people that are going to put up with a shitty community, then you might end up with a self-perpetuating cycle where you've only got shitty people left because they're the only ones that are going to put up with it. If you can try and build a good community environment, then you can get more people in from a wider group, from a wider background, and then get the best feedback. You don't want to be the tech company that makes an automatic hand dryer that only works for white people because you had no black people and no Asian people on your development team to be like, hang on a minute, guys. The test for if there's a hand under the hand dryer probably should be edge-based, not colour-based. You don't want to be that car company that only had male engineers, that had a really, really hefty-sized crash test dummy in their car where they're like, hey, it's awesome, we did the car crash test and everything's fine, rather than going, well, yeah, but the average woman tends to be a little bit shorter and a little bit skinnier, and in when we put a 6'2", 90-pound crash test dummy in, we've just decapitated them. If you're not thinking about the different kinds of people that are going to be using your software, different kinds of people that are going to be using your product, then you're going to have blind spots. You're going to make mistakes, and you're going to miss out. And one of the best ways to get that is to have a wide group of people in your community contributing to it, who are going to spot when things go wrong. Now, that could be as simple as having an Australian on your development team telling you that your assumption that in March the clocks are going to stay the same or go forward an hour does not universally hold true, and in March, in the Southern Hemisphere, the clocks go back. It could be as simple as working for a software development house in the UK. Every March, our unit tests would fail. The build would go red, because in the intervening 6 months, someone had got away with saying that local time and UTC are the same. And if all of your developers are in the UK, you can get away with that for 6 months of the year. You just need one developer, not in the UK, to spot that that assumption is not universally true in the winter. Like, but every single year for the first 2 years until we got our first Australian employee, we had that mistake. It's not that hard, but we made it. Now imagine what other blind spots that we had in our code from just having mostly white guys in England trying to decide what the features should be. If you've got a diverse group of people, you're going to have more people giving you good input about what really matters. So, it can be hard for most of us. It was harder for most of us than we often remember, and it can be even harder for some. But it is worth trying. It is worth making the effort. So, we have a new diversity project just getting set up at the moment. The website's not up yet, but they do have the mailing list. Otherwise, the longest standing one is the Community Development Project, which tries to provide advice and mentoring for projects. Don't forget the code of conduct. Don't be a dick. If some of this is new to you, then these are a handful of the resources that I found good. The slides will be going up about 10 minutes after I have a cup of coffee, so don't worry too much about taking these. You'll be able to get the slides. If this is of interest to you, if you've hopefully realised that diversity is not a bad word, please go online or go to conferences and hear diversity talks from people who are not middle-class, straight, white guys. There is a hell of a lot more to diversity than what I've experienced by being a guy in a charity, by going to France, some of these things. They've shown me a bit of diversity, a bit of what matters, but they're only scratching the surface. So if this is interested in you, please, please go and learn from the much wider group of people of all the different kinds of diversity, about all the different kinds of mistakes that we can make and all of the ways that we can improve upon it. Hopefully, it's all gone well. It's not been videoed this time, which is awesome, because the last time I gave this talk and it was videoed, I got 2 YouTube upvotes, and you would not believe how many downvotes. Apparently talking about diversity is not automatically popular. But hopefully, I mean, most of you in the room are still engaged, still getting some nods from people. I've only had 2 people walk out, which is probably pretty good. So hopefully you've enjoyed it. Hopefully you've learned a little bit of something, and hopefully you'll be able to go away and do some good things for your communities, help bring some more people into your company, help do better things for your company, help your project get new people, help your project get a wider group of people to do more interesting things, so that we can make the world a better place. We're here in open source trying to make a difference. We're scratching our own itches, yes, but we are doing this for the public good. That is the mission of the foundation, to produce open source software for the public good. Not for a handful of people's good, but for the public good, which means everyone, which means that we need everyone involved. So do please go away, make your projects better, make them more diverse, get more people involved, and truly make your software for the public good. Thank you.